Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, editor of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And this week, I'm joined by our online editor, Jack Shepherd.
Hello.
Hello, Jack. And our contributing editor, James Mottram.
Hello.
Hello, who has just fought technology to get to us. Well done, James.
Bravely, I would say.
Very bravely. So this week we're rating Matt Damon's Stillwater and Twitter-turned movie Zola, plus we're talking spoilers galore on Suicide Squad. But before we start on those, what have you guys been watching this week?
For the first time, I watched Francis Ha, the Brownback movie, because I'm moving back to the big city and felt like I could do with a reality check on how it's going to be. Unfortunately, I don't have any rich artists friends to move in with as I would like. Mm. But I really, really enjoyed that movie. And having watched a few French New Wave movies just before as well, it kind of hit just right. That was my big watch. Well, actually, I say big watch. I did another big watch as well, which was Metropolis for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Which was fantastic. Absolutely loved it. Though I wasn't sure I was watching the right print of it because there are various versions of it. But I wasn't watching the, is it Giorgio Moroder, the tech pioneer music artist who did a version where he kind of like changed and electrified all the soundtrack. And that was like the main version of it for a while. Anyway,
gosh,
there are a few prints out there. I hope
I think you've put us to shame there, Jack, because I've not been watching anything as highfalutin as that. What have you been watching, James?
Yeah, I'm with you. I've been getting myself in the mood for the People Just Do Nothing movie by watching some of the TV series, which has been highly enjoyable. Not quite as classy as Metropolis, but definitely put me in the mood to see the film when it comes out in a couple of weeks.
Hmm. I've been watching bits and pieces of the Olympics, mostly because I want to see Tom Daley knitting when they cut away to him. Don't you think it's amazing he can knit like dog jumpers and like pouches for his gold medals, crocheting stuff? It's just amazing. So that's what I've been doing.
I find the Olympics too confusing. There's too many events happening simultaneously, so I can't really keep up. Plus, it's in Japan, so the timings are all weird anyway. So most of it's passed me by, sadly.
Well, anyway, shall we get on and see what is a gold medal winner for this week? Should we pop over to Marseille for a little jaunt with this? Some folks are born
made to weather fly. You're in Marseille for vacation?
No, visiting my daughter.
You're the father of the girl, the American student?
Yes, ma'am.
Allison came here for college, and that's where she met this girl, Lena. One night, she found Lena dead and called the police. All they cared about was Allison sleeping with some Arab girl.
So this is Stillwater, which is not in Marseille. Where is Stillwater, and what's the connection to Marseille, James?
Stillwater is in Oklahoma, where Bill Baker, played by Matt Damon, comes from. He's a sort of ex oil rig worker. When you first see him in the film, he's kind of clearing up a tornado. He's kind of one of those guys basically who goes around cleaning up tornadoes and drilling for oil. But he comes over to Marseille in France. We don't know why at first, but it soon becomes clear his daughter Allison, played by Abigail Breslin, is sort of 5 years or so into a 9-year prison sentence for murder. And he's been regularly coming over to visit her. During this time, he comes over and does her washing, things like that. But they're kind of estranged as a father-daughter. And she sort of really hasn't got on with him in the past. She puts this real trust in him by saying, can you deliver this letter to my lawyer? She's found some new evidence somehow. She wants the kind of case reopened. He kind of ends up staying in Marseille, slightly taking it upon himself to investigate this case. But it goes in a direction you're probably not imagining. You're probably imagining Jason Bourne here going on the rampage. It's not quite like that in Stillwater.
This is Tom McCarthy, who wrote and directed Spotlight. It does have sort of different layers to it and is sort of based in reality. I mean, I think it wouldn't be unfair to say that this is sort of inspired by the Amanda Knox case that happened, where she was accused of murdering her friend and ended up doing some jail time in Italy, though not France. Did you like this, James? Did this grab you? Because it's something that people are talking about as possible awardsy.
Yeah, although strangely, I'm seeing lots of divisive comments on it. Some people absolutely have hated this film, and I thought it was really absorbing. I actually saw this in Cannes. It was playing out of competition there, and it was kind of like my fourth film of the day or something. I was tired. It was at 9:30 at night. It's 2.5 hours long. It wasn't really what I was wanting at that moment in time, but I was really thoroughly absorbed by it. I think the Amanda Knox thing is almost a kind of a red herring in a way. I mean, it's not in the sense that Tom McCarthy has admitted that he was fascinated by that case and it was almost a jumping off point, really. But I think beyond that, it's not really that connected to the story, although I believe she has come out recently and sort of complained.
She's done some tweeting, hasn't she, about it?
She's done some mega tweeting, done some with some justification, I suppose, that her name is being sort of used, you know, in regard to this film. But yeah, I thought I've never seen a Matt Damon performance like it. He's this kind of Republican, as I said, oil rig worker, kind of this big, thick guy with sort of, you know, muscles and fire retardant jeans. And it's very un-Matt Damon in a way, the performance. And then he kind of forges this family in France with this mother and her daughter who kind of help him. He's got terrible French. His French is almost
no French.
French. It's kind of like mine. And, you know, so it's an unusual story, I thought. It's not, as I said, it's not really your Jason Bourne on the Rampage kind of story. It's more about sort of finding family, finding something out of your worldview, I suppose. I mean, you know, in a way, it's like he's the American fish out of water character. You know, you kind of get to see what people think of Americans to some degree abroad. And he doesn't really care. All he's trying to do is get his daughter out of jail. But it's a really interesting perspective on how people view Americans as well. It's also co-written by a couple of guys who work for Jacques Audiard, the French filmmaker behind A Prophet and Deepan, mm-hmm. which won Cannes a few years ago. So it's not just been written by some Americans. It has got this kind of European perspective as well behind it.
One of the things I liked about this was not only Damon's performance, which, you know, as you said, he's sort of like this chunky, quiet guy. We haven't really seen this sort of everyman performance, not recently anyway. And the whole American fish out of water in France was I liked the sense that you really got of Marseille. I've never been to Marseille. But I felt that because everything was filmed there, on the streets, not in the smartest parts of town, it was with real people that lived there. And I felt I really got a good sense of the city and its sort of mysteries, but also what it would feel like if you were this guy, sort of all at sea with no French, living in the hotel, trying to work out how to get things done in a city where you don't speak the language. And the sort of intoxication of that as well, because, you know, he does become enamored with it, not only the city, but Virginie, this actress that he meets, who, as you said, is very kind to him and sort of helps him find his way around. And I felt exactly as he did, sort of at sea and a bit lost in this city, but also really warming to it and finding it really a sort of wonderful place to live. Did you like that element?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of talking of sort of the authenticity of it, they filmed in, forgive my French pronunciation here, but Baumette, I think it's pronounced, which is a sort of actual Marseille prison.
Yeah,
you don't see much of the prison, but what you do see are these
grotty
little rooms that they put them in to meet your loved ones. So normally in kind of prison movies, you imagine these big hallways where all the prisoners are lumped together with their sort of friends and family. But here they're these incredibly claustrophobic little chambers almost. Mm. And they're real. Those were actually, from what I've heard, the prison had stopped using them, but they were real sort of little chambers that they used to use. I think they were remodeling the prison, but they hadn't knocked them down yet. And that's what they used to use. So they let them use them. I thought that added a real authenticity. And, you know, as you said, they go to these sort of less than salubrious areas of Marseille, and you really do get a sense of the city. And particularly there's an absolutely staggering sequence where they go to the Stade Vélodrome.
Yeah,
the Olympic Marseille's ground, where they shot in a real match. Because normally football in movies is terrible because they try and recreate the games and it doesn't really look real. Here you see real fans, flares going off, all that kind of stuff. And it's incredibly atmospheric. We won't go into why he's at the stadium at that point, but it's quite a sort of tense moment, and it leads into a very tense moment. And it was really atmospheric, I thought. And I thought Tom McCarthy really drew from as many real points as he could in the locations that he found. And that really helped the film, I thought.
Yeah, because it's also this, you know, the idea that Marseille is this melting pot of different ethnicities, and that sometimes that can cause sort of friction, and that can, you know, you may not get a fair trial because of, you know, the ethnicity of the people involved in the story, be that American or other ethnicities. Just really interesting and really captured that sort of diversity in Marseille. But equally, it's got this sort of strange little whodunit at the heart of it as well, hasn't it? Which takes it to a place you don't expect it to go. You sort of think it's one thing, and it's a man sort of becoming seduced by Marseille and a French woman, and then it becomes an entirely different thing. Did you like that switch of streams?
It's a difficult thing to talk about, obviously, without giving too much away. There's a certain element, not long after that football match sequence, actually, where you probably do have to suspend your disbelief a little bit. And that was the moment that the film almost toppled over for me. I think it just got away with it. But you're right. You're never really sure about this film, where it's going, what it's about exactly. It keeps switching lanes. And I thought that was a really successful element of the film. I mean, as I sort of said earlier, it's kind of about this guy completely out of his comfort zone, perhaps realizing the world is wider than Oklahoma oil rigs and, you know, what he's grown up with. You know, he's clearly not interested in broadening his worldview, but perhaps by the end he realizes that there is a little more out there than, you know, what he's used to.
Yes, and that he should broaden his worldview about people too, because not everyone is what they seem either. Yeah, I really loved this film. I just thought it was really good about ethics and family and the fragility of family and love. Yeah, I found everything about it really, really interesting, and I was absolutely captured by it. But yes, as you say, there is a sort of element of having to suspend your disbelief when it tries to get a thriller element into it by the end, but I totally bought it because of everything else that was going on. And I actually could imagine that Damon might get some awards nods for this, because I think it's a really good performance of his. However, he's also got The Last Duel coming out at the end of the year during awards sort of corridor season. So probably that's what he'll be gunning for in terms of performance.
Yeah, although I guess The Last Duel is, from what I'm led to believe, a sort of, I suppose, almost a three-hander with Adam Driver and Ben Affleck. So how big his role is sort of remains to be seen. Whereas this very much, you know, he is the lead. Mm. Whether he ends up, you know, splitting the vote as can happen in these kind of Oscar races, who knows? But yeah, I thought it was just one of the best performances I've seen in a long time from him. Just because it's so different to what we're used to with him. And that's great when an actor just completely blindsides you and shakes you up like that. Mm. I really hope he does get some recognition for this.
Well, we'll see. Okay, if you want to see Matt Damon in Stillwater, it's out on Friday at cinemas everywhere. Okay, now it's time for alternative line reading. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to do it in the style of a Wicked Witch from Snow White, but tell me what movie this is from.
How'd you like them apples?
I mean, that is a magnificent line reading, whatever film this is from. I've got no... I'm rubbish at this. I never get any of these right.
Come on.
I don't know.
I feel like this is on the tip of my tongue.
Is it a comic book related movie? Are we on that?
No. No. Think about something else we've talked about this week.
Oh my God, what?
Do you want a clue?
Yes, please.
Yes.
It's a Matt Damon movie.
Is it Good Will Hunting?
Thank you. Thank you, Jack, for putting everyone out of their misery, because I thought that was super easy.
You know, I'm good at remembering years of films, just lines of dialogue in one ear, out the other. Terrible.
How'd you like them apples? How have you not said that to somebody when you've bested them at something? How'd you like them apples? James, you need to start using it. Okay.
I do.
It sounds like this.
Do you like apples?
Yeah.
Well, I got a number. How do you like them apples?
Okay, so from that, shall we go on holiday to Florida? How about a trip to Tampa with this?
Hey, last month I went dancing at this cute spot in Florida where my roommate's girl made like 5 G's a night. Because
just met yesterday and you're already trying to take hoe trips together?
Be ready by 2.
Hi, bitch!
You want to hear a story about how me and this bitch fell out? It's kind of long, but it's full of suspense.
This is Zola, which was a Twitter thread, has been turned into a movie. Is it successful, Jack? What's it about?
So this is about a young woman named Zola who works as a waitress. And then one day while waiting on two people, one of them is this lady, Stephanie, played by Riley Keough, who invites Zola to go dancing with her at a strip joint in America. And the two of them, they get boogieing. They become good friends, kind of, well, overnight good friends. They're texting lots. And Stephanie invites Zola out to Florida. So they go on this road trip with Stephanie, Stephanie's partner, played by a very funny Nicholas Braun, and Stephanie's housemate. And things go awry quite quickly. It turns out they're not just going to go dancing together to make a lot of money. There's a lot more at play. I mean, I read the Twitter thread before.
Did you? Because I hadn't read it. Had you read it, James?
No, I'd never even heard of it until this film materialised.
Oh, so that's interesting. So how did you find the film having read the thread, Jack?
It was different to what was in my head. I almost wish I hadn't read it first. Obviously, you build your own version of the story within your head. But the way the movie incorporates it is very interesting and very fun, like with Zola kind of talking to camera and this kind of voiceover, and even the Twitter sounds, like you can hear the internet in this.
There's
movie.
Always
yeah, and it's every time she says a line verbatim from the tweets. So it's very, very well done. I really enjoyed the kind of the editing in the movie, the way it all came together, and it's quite a thrill. I found it like an almost experiential movie. Like the characters don't seem to learn much. So what they go through is wild. What did you guys make of it?
I haven't read the thread at all. So I was coming at this from a point of view of having seen Spring Breakers and The Beach Bum. And it was sort of in that sort of milieu for me. So I enjoyed it more than those films. Florida, Girls Gone Wild, sort of low life sort of areas of town and dodgy guys with guns and everything. And, you know, some massively impressive pole dancing that, you know, which I developed appreciation from having seen J-Lo do it in Hustlers, and this took it to another level. So yeah, there was a lot of things I liked about it, but then I also felt a bit weird about it because it felt weirdly exploitative as well. And then I couldn't decide if maybe that's the point of the director, that it's, I'm supposed to be viewing it from the point of view of sort of these lechy men that go to strip clubs and watch women. And it's supposed to make me feel uncomfortable to watch these women and to gaze at their bodies the way the camera does. So yeah, I was a bit sort of confused about it. I sort of liked it, but also felt uneasy about it. How about you, James?
I thought it was repulsive.
Oh, okay.
I mean, perhaps that's a little harsh, but it was the kind of film that was so dirty, I felt like I needed to have a shower after it. It was a very seedy film. I think all of what you both say is completely true. It is stylishly made. I just found the characters repulsive. Maybe that's more of an accurate
Yeah, I mean, nobody's a hero in this, are they?
No. I mean, Coleman Domingo, who we haven't mentioned, who's the sort of pimp character that's kind of... I mean, Coleman's a fantastic actor. I mean, he was in If Beale Street Could Talk and The Underground Railroad recently. I mean, he's a wonderful actor. I've just seen him in Candyman as well. But yeah, here he's just reprehensible. And there's nothing wrong with actors playing reprehensible characters. We see it all the time. I just didn't dig any of the characters. I mean, Riley Keough, I really like as a performer. There's this one shot early on where it's like the end of Taxi Driver, where the camera's in the air hovering over the dead people that De Niro has slain, except this time they're in a female toilet and it's kind of gliding over them as they lean over the toilet bowls, and you see, dare I say, what's left in the toilet bowls. Yeah. That was not really what I needed to see.
I know, but I kind of like that because it was like, you know, one girl did a wee that was a normal colour, and, you know, Riley's character is so vile that her pee is like toxic, yellow, disgusting, like everything.
Yeah, you could say it was a good metaphor for the characters.
Yeah, everything about this girl. Everything about this girl is horrible. She's like, she is horrible. You can't trust her. She talks in this ridiculous accent that nobody has. She wears horrible clothes. She's just absolutely ruthless and mercenary, and everything about her is awful, but that's, I sort of found that a little bit thrilling to watch. Did you like that sort of element, Jack?
I think having read the Twitter, I was definitely more prepared because in my head, this was going to be worse than it was, like, as in more horrible than it was. I mean, I quite like exposition through urine. That's quite funny. you know, there's some clever moments like that. I will say I definitely enjoyed watching it. I found the ending disappointing.
Yeah, it just sort of finished without real closure.
That was kind of odd.
But I guess that's like a Twitter thread, though, isn't it? You read a Twitter thread and sometimes you lose the end of it because so many other people chime in with it that actually it disappears and you don't get to finish it. So I kind of thought it was maybe intentional.
I could have maybe done with like seeing where they are now or something like that, just to kind of wrap it up. It almost tried to be at points maybe a little too edgy. And I mean, the characters are repulsive and there are some scenes that, you know, definitely stayed with me because they were so nasty. You know, there's one bit when just before it flicks to a different online thread. I don't even want to say out loud what happens because it's just like so gross. It was just, people don't want that in their ears.
Does it involve a schoolgirl skirt?
Yes.
Yeah. And some gentlemen.
Yeah. All that kind of stuff. So things like that, it definitely, you can't believe it's real. And then the fact that it's based on a true story. I mean, Zola herself is a executive producer on this movie, which is quite entertaining.
But Zola herself, her account has been challenged by her friend as well. So all of it's quite heightened and all of it is, you can pick and choose what you think did happen or what actually happened and what's been embellished. I mean, Twitter is like this sort of folklore thing now, isn't it, where people tell stories around a campfire, or used to, and now tell stories on Twitter, and whether you choose to believe that they're actually true or just, you know, entertaining stories is for you to decide. I don't know with this whether
I don't think they played up that enough, that sort of unreliable narrator aspect. There's a little bit halfway where they sort of switch to narrators, but I didn't get the impression as to what was true or what wasn't. And I'm not sure if I was interested enough to find out. I would certainly put it above The Beach Bum, which is
terrible,
appallingly bad film, but not below Spring Breakers if we're talking in this subgenre of, you know,
of Dirty South, Girls in Florida.
Dirty Girls. I mean, that is an interesting subgenre in itself, and I'd like to see more of those perhaps, but just not this one.
Just things like people's accents change. So, you know, you mentioned Coleman there, his accents changes all the time from American to Southern to like this strange Nigerian accent that he, and it's sort of, I felt like that was intentional as well, to say everything's shifting in terms of perspective and truth. You know, you should take it all with a pinch of salt. But again, maybe I'm reading too much into it.
That is quite a deep reading. That's not quite where I was going with it. I mean, I think my main issue was that the characters felt quite one note, in that, you know, Zola was pessimistic about the journey the whole time, almost, apart from maybe the first 10 minutes. And then, you know, this woman, Stephanie, was just, Riley Kerr's character was just the way she was the whole time. Coleman's character, X, was just, that was how he was. And there wasn't that much growth from any of them. And I think maybe as like a narrative, I would have quite liked to have seen a bit more change. And I think that's, again, where the ending kind of disappointed, in that we didn't see, like, even where they are now, whether any lessons have been learned or anything, which I guess sounds a bit more like, you know, maybe fits in more of like a fairy tale narrative or something. But I guess that is what it was trying to say, is like, this is just life. This is an experience someone had in one wild, crazy weekend. It is what it is. And you can be disgusted with it, or you can find it kind of like a thrilling watch. And it's definitely been interesting hearing James's and yours perspective on it and how different everyone is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is like reading Twitter, isn't it? Like, some people are outraged by something someone says. Some people are like, you know, preach, yes, clapping hands emoji. I think this film is designed to be sort of received the same way. Take of it what you will and read into it what you will.
I think I might be a bit depressed that an entire narrative has been spun out of a Twitter thread. I mean, what next? An emoji string or something? And then where will we be? Well, there was the emoji movie already.
You already have that, James. So I don't know, you know, you may get a bit more depressed if you go and watch that one. Okay, so I think we're saying this is quite divisive then, and quite it's probably a great one to go and see with your mates if everyone's going to have a different opinion, right?
Yes, just be ready to feel disgusting afterwards. That's all I'll say.
Get that shower, get that bath, get that loofah and scrub yourself afterwards.
Okay, so that is Zola. Out of cinemas on Friday. Be prepared to bathe all day Saturday. So now it's time for the TF team to talk about another squad. And we're doing spoilers. It's time for the Suicide Squad spoiler review. Get ready. Go away if you've not seen it. Come back if you have. It's this.
okay.
Each member is chosen for his or her own completely unique set of abilities.
I need to feel the raindrops on my head, on my head.
Hey guys, sorry I'm late. Had to go number two.
Good to know.
Okay, so this is Suicide Squad, which, again, quick spoiler announcement. We are talking spoilers, so don't listen if you haven't seen it yet. But this is the second Suicide Squad film that's come out. It's The Suicide Squad, not Suicide Squad by David Ayer. And it's pretty damn good, right? What did you love about it? You can say anything you like now.
I thought the action was pretty awesome. I mean, I'm slightly down on this movie.
Are you?
Now you've built me up. I thought Idris was really good at anchoring
MVP,
the movie.
Right?
Definitely great. I thought Ratcatcher as a character was a lot of fun. And I thought Harley had her moments. So there were lots of things that kept me entertained during this. But I think my biggest issue, it's spoiler talk, I could talk about it,
yes.
Is that the first 20 minutes builds up the film to be like, everyone's at risk. Anyone can die. And then no one really dies until like the very end. So you kind of have this big like hour and a half period or so where there's just like the threat seems to like die almost. And I found that quite distracting because I was like, oh, come on, you got to kill off someone.
Well, you're so bloodthirsty. You've already had poor old Weasel drown immediately because no one considered whether he could swim. You've had heads blown off. You had people like chopped up by rotaries off helicopters. Slice down the middle, you know, like all manner of maiming and murder. Did you just want 2 hours of that? What's wrong with you?
Listen, I could
did you not want
spread
to
out a bit more.
Know your characters before they die? Is that not the point? Like the first bit is completely disposable. Then we're asked to care about them. And then we really do care when they die. When at the beginning, I did care about Weasel, I have to say, because I thought he was quite cute.
But I think this is what makes the movie like Suicide Squad just so hard to make. And this one was definitely a step up, obviously. But there were none of the characters which I really like loved. Like I liked Bloodsport. I liked Ratcatcher. I found Taika Waititi's cameo distracting.
Ugh, annoying.
And like, I mean, Harley was in it. I mean, I like her because I've seen her in the other stuff. But this is maybe probably not my favorite appearance of hers. Like I liked Polka Dot Man for a time. Because you're already told not to get attached to them. So you don't. And then when they kind of stay alive, you're like, oh, maybe I should have warmed to him slightly more. But maybe that's just me. What did you think, James?
Did it work for you, James?
Yeah, I absolutely freaking love this film.
There basically. You go. You there see, you Jack's wrong.
I absolutely hated the first one. I mean, with a vengeance. And I actually ended up seeing it twice for some reason and didn't like it the second time around either. You know, I don't know why. Who knows? I know it was terrible. Even though, of course, Harley Quinn is great in that film and pretty much saves the movie. But I love the way this starts out by sort of self-destructing a number of the characters that you knew from the original. So it's almost like, yes, it's the same universe, but now we're going to sort of partly blow up that universe, but rescue a couple of the cool characters, wipe out a load of the other ones. I just really like that as an idea. We haven't mentioned King Shark yet. I mean, anything that has a slow motion shot of him ripping some poor henchman apart in twain in slow motion is all right by me. As long, you know, if you don't mind that kind of cartoon violence, that sequence sort of relatively early on where they kind of meet up with these revolutionaries that have rescued Rick Flag. And of course, they don't know they're revolutionaries and they spend the entire sort of few moments killing all of them in maiming them in horrible ways. And then they realize that they're actually the good guys. I thought that was incredibly clever, brilliantly funny sequence. There's just a lot of James Gunn-esque humor that I really dug in it. And then you get these really weird moments like King Shark stopping and seeing those strange little luminescent creatures in the water at one point. And the Harley moment where she's kind of fighting a load of people, but loads of flowers spin out of her instead of blood and what have you. And just weird little moments like that that I absolutely loved.
Yes. And also, we've got to talk about Starro. Like, come on, you've got that other movie that happens at the end of this. So you've got like this mercenary movie happening to find Project Starfish, which turns into this enormous starfish that's like destruction porn and like alien-esque spores that come out of it and stuck on people's faces and buildings crashing down. And how do you stop it? did you like that? Jack, did that float your boat at all? No.
I like the little stars. I like the face huggers. They were creepy. I don't know. I think I'm slightly done with the third act destruction of a city in these superhero movies. I mean, like Black Widow did it. This did it. I like that it's a massive starfish destroying everything. That's funny. It's dumb and it works. I like that, you know, it's borderline anti-American sentiment of, you know, the Americans have come in and, you know, they're testing on all these people. That's really interesting and feels slightly, I mean, borderline like brave of them to do something like that. Especially the fight between Rick Flag and Peacemaker is a really interesting battle of wills, you know, theologies and stuff. So I did very much like that. I could have done without, you know, a few buildings being destroyed, but that's just me. That's never really tickled me too much.
Yeah. I mean, again, sort of talking of little oddities, there's that moment where they have this character, Milton, that's sort of tagging along with them. And then he dies. He probably is the first sort of emotional character that dies. And then they have this long conversation about, well, some of them remember him. Some of them have no idea who he is.
Yeah, like who's Milton?
Yeah, who's Milton? I thought that was hilarious. Just, you know, you've got all this carnage going along and then Harley Quinn is sort of questioning who even this guy is that has tagged along with them in the background. I'm hoping for maybe a Milton prequel where we get more of him.
I agree that kind of stuff was really funny. And like the bit you mentioned earlier about kind of like killing all the revolutionaries. And there are definitely some jokes that really worked. Like King Shark was just hilarious throughout. But, big but, I mean, I found some of the violence too much.
It is very violent, yes.
I'm not against violence in movies and stuff. I mean, I play way too many video games. But there's a point where it's being like played for laughs in a way that just wasn't that funny to me anyway. There were some jokes, like there was one, and I will say, unfortunately, I found Harley the main offender. There's one where they're coming up with a plan and she's like walking back and forth and she's like, I'm walking back and forth. That's not funny. And then like her joking about like 69 while being like hung up. And I was like, this is a bit like a Reddit forum come to life. And I think what's odd there then is that they seem more childish jokes, yet they're in this movie that's very much aimed at, you know, lots of swear words, lots of, you know, violence at the older audience. So I think for me that didn't quite work.
Did you not enjoy Peter Capaldi's cranium?
I thought he was underused in it, Mr. Capaldi. I would have liked to see more of him. The idea behind him was really interesting, you know, having this kind of tortured scientist who's being forced to work for you and stuff like that. And his maniacal plans to, I don't know, take over the human race or whatever using these face huggers. He was slightly underneath, but this is it. It's just a massive ensemble piece thing. You almost have to just take it while you're watching it. Because I did enjoy it while I was watching. I think I've overthought it. And looking back in retrospect, I'm like, did I like that character? Not sure. But in the moment, I was having a good time.
Yeah, and it's got a great soundtrack. I mean, I loved as well seeing them all hang out in a bar wearing bizarre clothes and drinking and having a good time before it all goes to shit again. I like those sort of elements of it. That made me warm to them. I loved the sort of interstitial things that they had, where they had different sort of title cards that were in like burning grass or whatever it was behind, and sort of this sort of very self-aware, poppy, you know, comic book sensibility that was going on that said, you know, like, we know it's not for real, and yet we're just playing it hard and fast, and we're doing that, and we're going there. I think it's just really ballsy and fun, and I don't think you necessarily have to think too much about it.
I did enjoy Viola Davis as well as coming back as Amanda Waller. She practically had an aneurysm for that performance. I mean, she was, her head looked like it was going to explode at times. She was so angry with the...
She just looked like a mum trying to deal with toddlers, didn't she? And, you know, any woman probably can understand that that's had to deal with children during lockdown. She's just furious. Why can't everyone just tidy up their bowls? You know, she is just that. I loved it. And I loved the fact that as well, like, she had this sort of little crew of people that were the morality to her immorality, who finally turned on her and sort of sorted her out in the end. That, again, it's about comradeship, whatever that may be, weird or wonderful.
Yeah. You're about to say, like, dealing with the Total Film Team.
It is like dealing with the Total Film Team as well, because why don't they clear up their bowls? dear me, there is a dishwasher, guys.
Joel Kinnaman, was good to see him with more to do in this one. Flag was a much, much more rounded character. I would agree that I don't think it was Harley's best appearance in a, well, in the sort of three films she's been done. Although I quite enjoyed her, I suppose, love affair with Javelin Man. And what does she do with the javelin, which she wanders all the way through the film? I mean, a ridiculously silly kind of thing, but you knew it was going to come to fruition at one point. But this is the thing. It's just a completely bonkers, stupid cartoon comic book kind of movie. But I thought it pulled that off quite well, as long as you leave your brain very much at home.
Yeah, and it's also, she and Ratcatcher 2, are actually really quite key people in this, and Amanda Waller. There are women being strong and not caring about what people think about them and doing their own thing and having agency in this, that is really quite exciting to see when you we've seen a lot of guys in superhero matchups. I think it's really great that Gunn's put some really fantastic women in here, and Alice Braga as the revolutionary leader as well. There are women everywhere in this that are taking control and kicking ass and taking names, and I liked that.
Gunn's kind of chosen one of the, I would say, stranger choices to kind of do a follow-up on. I would have thought he would have chosen Ratcatcher 2 to do some sort of sequel about, but he's chosen Peacemaker to do a new TV show about, and it wasn't known before whether it was going to be a prequel or a sequel. Now that the post-credit scene, the very end credit scene, has Peacemaker still alive, it seems very much that it's going to be, a sequel to this. I'm not sure how excited I am by that. I am intrigued to see this man kind of battle more against, how far is he willing to go for peace? I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
I really enjoyed him in this film. I don't know about how it will span across a TV series, but I thought John Cena was very, very funny. I mean, he's kind of having a pretty good summer after F9 as well.
And, but he's not really good in that.
Well, he's okay in that, but, he's still been in the two biggest movies of the year, pretty much. And, he's a man who wears a toilet bowl on his head, as they say in the film. So I can't, I thought it was quite just a self-aware, wry little performance. I really enjoyed it. Again, whether it will work at a TV series, I don't know. They'll have to really think that one out, obviously.
But as Jack said, that sort of push-pull with what Rick Flagg thought was the best thing for mankind and what Peacemaker thought was the best thing for mankind were completely diametrically opposed. And so maybe we're just going to see him put in different positions of ethical quandaries to see how much that gung-ho spirit, how far that takes him, and how much that sort of jingoistic God Bless America stuff actually works when he's put up against people who have very different views. I'm kind of interested by that. I think that would be quite interesting. And especially, with the world as it is at the moment, I think a lot of audiences would be able to relate to various different mindsets of that. So I think it'd be something that people would watch, enjoy, and actually relate to more so than probably Suicide Squad. The only thing I kind of didn't like was a lot of bird death. Does James Gunn not like birds? We have like a bird death in prison, where a bird is killed by a ball.
That was a bit nasty, that sequence. I thought that, which is quite weird given that what happens later on is so much bloodshed, probably because it looked the most realistic death in the entire film.
Little bird is truly an innocent and is squashed, but then perhaps that's just a sort of an hors d'oeuvre for what we're about to see, because there are lots of other innocent people killed later on. It's not just the baddies that are out doing their mission. There's lots of folk in the town that we see trampled. There's lots of people, obviously, the revolutionaries we see killed who are perhaps not innocent, but, certainly trying to be on the right side of history. But yeah, and then there's other bird deaths that happen. The parakeets that get set aflame by the bad guy in the palace, and they're all screaming as they're on fire. I was like, what's going on? What's with this bird thing?
You weren't bothered by some guy getting his head sliced by boomerang, but no. Just some birds getting their feathers singed.
They weren't singed, James. They were screaming as they were burnt alive. And there was another bird thing as well later on. You sort of see a bird revenge, don't you? The bird pecking away at the sort of blown off neck of Michael Rooker. But yeah, I quite like a bird. So I found that a bit disturbing.
Perhaps next time he could, if he does a third or at least a second one for him, what would it be called? The Suicide Squad? I don't know what they'd call it. Or maybe they'd put another preposition in.
A Suicide Squad? Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, no more birds if James Gunn is listening.
I don't want any more bird deaths or any animal deaths at all, really. Just bad guys and bad gals. That'll do. So do you think this is ripe for a sequel? Do you think we will get more of this? Because who's alive to go on? This is the thing.
I guess they could, but the fun is in the novelty of it. And that novelty's been done twice now, effectively, in slightly different ways, you know, more successfully this time around. Do we need another one? I'm not sure. More likely that there'll be, as we were talking with the Peacemaker TV series, there'll be spin-offs. And, you know, obviously we already had the Harley Quinn spin-off, Ratcatcher 2 spin-off, Polka Dot Man. I mean, you know, you could go in all different branches, I guess.
So I guess we'll see what offshoots we get and whether Harley Quinn is going to turn up in anyone else's bits, which she may well do appear in Peacemaker or any of the other offshoots. I just hope that Taika Waititi doesn't turn up again in anything, because that was a weird miscast as Ratcatcher's father. Did you?
Yeah, the first time you see him, I didn't even realise it was him. And then it was only later that I was like, oh my God, that's Taika Waititi. But a bit insignificant as a role, unfortunately. He's got too many movies on his plate anyway. He needs to be directing at the moment. He doesn't need to be...
Yeah, concentrate on Love and Thunder, Taika, and, you know, stop messing about with these other things. Would you go see it twice?
Not immediately, but I might. You know, if I was taking someone that hadn't seen it, I guess I wouldn't object. Certainly compared to the first one, which I did have to sit through, as I said, a second time, I'd be much more amenable to sitting through this one again.
I'd like to see what they do with it when they do a cut for Planes, where they have to take out all the rude things and the violence. Will there be a film list?
5-minute long film.
Yeah, it would just be a little beginning bit, a little bit of a chat from Waller, starfish romping around the end. But anyway, okay, so that is Suicide Squad. Let us know what you thought of it and any theories you have. Before we go, it's time for a reader's question. Which movie prisoner would you like to be sent on a mission with? This is obviously to tie in with Suicide Squad. Jack, who would you like to go on a mission with? A movie prisoner.
I mean, I think I'd go with someone from Suicide Squad just to keep it on brand. And that would probably be Rick Flagg, because
he's competent, isn't he?
He's just very solid at his job. And in the end, even though he's kind of fighting with the anti-heroes, he tries to do the right thing. And I admire that. And I feel like he'd have my back, because even in this movie, he has a certain someone's back as well. So that would probably be my pick.
Indeed. James?
I went for Steve McQueen in The Great Escape.
Classic.
I mean, technically, he's not done anything wrong. So prisoner, depends how you
look
at it.
But he is a prisoner of war, so you can have him.
He's a prisoner of war, yeah. And he's got a super motorbike and he'll get you out, basically.
Indeed. Or will he? He won't. He's not going to. I was thinking in a classic realm as well. I was thinking Paul Newman from Cool Hand Luke. I don't know that he'd really get you out of anything, but I would just enjoy watching him eat 50 eggs occasionally whenever I challenged him to it. So I might have him. And also, you know, he's very nice to look at. Classic Paul Newman in black and white, obviously, next to me. Lovely. Okay, so those are our picks for prisoners. Let us know yours on Twitter. But for now, I think we'll say goodbye. Say goodbye, boys.
Goodbye. Bye. Played it in a sack.